Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We have we've been talking a lot of Super Bowl, a lot of memories, a lot of 20 years in Purple Rain, and I've had Coach Billick and Marvin Lewis, and we're going to tell all these memories, but I don't want to get too far off the prize and keep my eye on the ball, because 20 years ago, it was very, very easy back in 2001 to say, well, the Orioles were good a couple of years ago. They'll be fine. The old man's got a lot of money. They'll figure it out. Then you realize they weren't going to figure it out. Then the Ravens won another Super Bowl. And now we are, we've been pushing the ball at 15 years down the line now. The Washington Nationals have existed for 15 years, Marty Conway. And even when Tom Brady's going to Super Bowls and, you know, the Ravens are figuring out off seasons and licking their Lamar Jackson wounds and Eric DaCosta's having press conferences, the Orioles still know how to do a Friday news dump, don't they? When that was a beaut, wasn't it?
Well, there was a lot there. Let's put it that way. And, look, some of it was, obviously it was impactful. I'll say that. I don't think for anybody that followed it closely that there was any stunning or shock there. I mean, last year, what they had last year with 19 people listed as, you know, involved in the broadcast, but literally half of those people were not participating, at least in any meaningful way. And then, you know, we play 60 games. We don't play 160. There's all sorts of things that go into it. So
money.
Yeah. So, you know, Gary Thorne not returning and some of the other things. I think that was largely predictable, save this. Although I do think that there was a place and opportunity missed. And that is anybody that spends 10 or 20 or more years connected to the ball club, particularly around the media side, I think it's an opportunity to, say farewell in some formal way at the end of a broadcast, whatever that is. So that's, I think that's a missed opportunity, and that's something that will stick for some time unless until they can find a way to correct that.
Yeah, I for me, Marty, I'm not even superficial about this. Times change, broadcasters change. I mean, I started thinking about, I'm doing all my Ravens magic here, right? Garceau did the games, right?
Yeah.
And Tom
yeah.
Matty, they did yeah. do the games a second time around, you know?
Right.
And there's bad vibes and this and that. And, you know, all mm-hmm. that with people, mm-hmm. including me not having a press pass for the last 15 years. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've viewed this from the very beginning. You know, I've written tomes about this. You're one of the only people in the world I even want to talk to about this, because most people are so, I mean, Jeff Barker, I wouldn't even put him on the show, because like every time I read his stuff, I know more than he does. And I know he's only getting his information from one place. This has been the toughest story to report on, to get anyone to care about. But I did notice on Friday night how pissed the Nationals fans are, right? So there's at least that. I mean, the Orioles franchise, the fan base, the sponsorship, the media, it's like a bear in the woods in the winter, right? Like, it's such a hibernating brand at this point that they don't want you to know anything. They're cloaked in secrecy. Masson officials were unavailable for comment. We couldn't find Greg Bader. So all this has been going on, and no one's gotten pissed. You know what I mean? Like, no one's really all that angry. I mean, Luke's a little pissed about the app thing, which I'm going to give you a chance to explain. I'm not a guy that needs to watch the Oriole game when I'm not in my house, but it's absurd that I'm tethered to my living room mm-hmm. and paying for it. How much money they've made and now crying poor. Marty, this is where I'm going to leave it on your doorstep. The really smart, astute fans who are a little older and grayer, who've run a business and, you know, ain't the guy up in the upper deck, you know, just the Orioles. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, Mike Elias runs a business for the Orioles. You know, like, I'm not talking about that guy. I'm talking about people that are smart, are Nationals fans, people that listen to NPR. It feels like they're trying to poor mouth the Angelos family, and it feels like one more thing they're setting up, and I know you don't think the franchise is going anywhere. We've been back and forth on that, and that's cool, and I respect your opinion more than anybody's on that, but it does feel like the type of thing you want to do when you're trying to poor mouth to try to get a better deal or whatever the next play. It's like waiting on Mitch McConnell. It's like whatever the next Angelos legal play is going to be to F Major League Baseball and to get involved with the state, just the way the old man did it, to get whatever the next thing they want to get in this lease. And more than anything, they look poor. And I don't know if they are or aren't, but they're trying to look that way.
Well, there's a lot there to unpack for sure. But number one, last year that baseball had truly was devastating for the league overall and for all of its teams in there. I do think it is a legitimate. We'll find out as they talk to the players again prior to this season.
What does that really mean, though, Marty? I mean, when the rubber meets the road, yeah. Give me a Forbes look at that. Yeah. Like how much they lost and how much they saved, right?
Look, so I think it's fair to say that each team likely would have seen $100 million less revenue last year than they did in prior years. And here's why. The formula is a little bit complicated, so stick with me on this. And that is about 35 or maybe close to 40% of the revenues generated by the local club are shared with every other team in the league. So you take your money that is part of the revenue sharing component and you ship it to the league. At the end of the year, I'll just simplify it, they send people back a portion of that revenue, right? Because it's a revenue sharing. Some people pay in more, get back less. Some people pay in less, get back more. Baltimore, Oakland, franchises like that could have been in a situation where they got increased revenue share payments. But having said that, let's just keep it simple in that respect. So I do think last year, every team clearly experienced, because there were no or limited fans or whatever you want to call it in the stands around the league. I do think they saw that damage. Then in addition, whatever local revenues that weren't shareable, sometimes that's media revenue, sometimes that's corporate sponsorship deals, it's other things like that. If that didn't materialize or they weren't able to collect everything in the agreement because they weren't able to meet the minimums that they had there to do that. So I think legitimately each team. Now, on top of that, going into this year, because of the uncertainty, clearly who's going to continue to purchase their season plan? Again, I think corporate sponsors might continue to hang in there with their tickets. But like you said, people that buy a mini plan or split a mini plan amongst four people, I think there were some real, real losses there. And so I think there's, put it in short, there's an accumulation of losses that do matter. Now, that impacts each team differently. And I do think in the past, I think Chris Davis is a shining example of that. I do think somebody involved in the Angelos family in the warehouse decided to put money in order to make something happen. Well, that was probably the last time that we ever saw that, where there was a quote-unquote contribution to do that. In addition, the last piece is this Masson debacle that has now turned into a maybe 80 net, if you net it all out, an $80 million, $90 million payment that somebody's going to have to make to the Nationals. Look, I don't think that Masson...
That's not really a lot of money, by the way.
Well, I don't think it comes
necessarily... $6 million a year over 15 years if you... it's not
right,
a lot of money.
But the question is, how and when are they going to pay that? And look, again,
it's a middle infielder.
I don't think there's any trouble getting the money. Look, if you have an asset like the Orioles or you have an asset like Masson, you're going to qualify for a significant amount of credit loans if you want in order to pay it. I don't think they have it from cash flow, right? I don't think they have it from their day-to-day operating cash flow. So I think the combination of those things puts the Orioles, because if you look only 42 miles down the road from home plate to home plate, the Nationals, they're signing a $10 million reliever. They're signing a $2 million John Lester. I mean, they're doing a number of things like that. So you can clearly see the difference in the enterprise value of the franchise and what is happening in tickets and local revenues and sponsorships and things like that. And so I think that's what people would look at and say, hey, what's really happening here? Because at the end of the day, all of that money comes back to major league payroll, it comes to minor league operations, and it comes to operating teams in the Dominican Republic. And that's where the Orioles have put their emphasis at the moment.
Well, on the minor league thing, they've just decimated that from the top down, right? So that's going to be a global issue that the Frederick Keys types are never going to recover from that. And those communities are not going to have minor league baseball or players coming through there or kids running out to get a ball signed and all the stuff that you grew up with on upstate New York and I grew up with over in East Baltimore and Jim Palmer and all that. The Baltimore side of this, the news dump, Marty, on Friday titillated me to want to throw you a text. Say, Marty, we got to come on and talk about this, right? And, you know, God bless Mike Bordick and Rick Dempsey and Tom Davis and anything else that's out there. But then the Monday thing comes over the weekend where they kind of put the screws to the Nationals as an organization pre and post. And the Masson part, and I'm not here to cry a river for the Nationals in any way, but I think there's going to be some hell to pay, right? One way or another. Like, this relationship's not going well. We've known that forever, but there has to be some sort of end to it, right? 15 years into this, what's the end game? Because I see the Washington side, and I guess that's where I alluded to even Book Dion this week during the Super Bowl thing. It feels like there's going to be some motion or some movement soon with the old man, with John, with the lease, with the Baltimore, with Nashville, with Major League Baseball, with whatever Oakland and Tampa are going to do. It feels like in the next 36 months, a lot's going to get dusted up here, and there's nobody but me or you to even talk about it. I don't hear anybody else intelligently, the Washington Post maybe, because now they're pissed off that the bear's been poked where everybody in Washington's angry again. And, you know, when that happens, I think change happens.
Well, what'd the great Warren Zevon say? Bring lawyers, guns, and money. I think we're going to see two of those. I think we're going to see lawyers and money. If this is going to end, and I do project that it will end in that regard, I think the Nationals have been trying really hard lawyer-wise for a number of years to find some sort of breach, to find some sort of default, whatever it can be. And again, that release that you're talking about, which is to essentially say Masson as the entity is no longer going to produce each of those pregame shows for the teams, they're essentially saying, we're going to give you, and I don't know if you noticed this or not, initially they said a 15-minute sort of lead-in with the talent play-by-play on the game. I understand that over the weekend that was revised upwards by John Angelos to 30 minutes, and I don't know if that came from public pressure, pressure from the Nats to make it seem like it looked like they were abrogating their responsibility in the contract. And again, I just want to emphasize, there's an important clause in the agreement, the Masson agreement, that says there's a parity clause that whatever Masson as the entity does for the Orioles or Nationals, they have to do vice versa. So there isn't the ability to say, well, we're going to cut the Nationals pregame, but keep the Orioles pregame, right? So there's that standard that they have.
Well, that was the poison pill that sits, that's chapter one, paragraph one. You know, that is the story of how the Orioles have got and fans here have gotten screwed. The real inequity is they never really tried hard. They never, because the more they had to pay themselves, the more they'd have to pay the Nationals. So it was always better for them. So I've often wondered, and Marty, man, you and I over 15 years, between me and you and Forbes and, you know, the people that I've met in the industry have put pen to paper on all of this. They were making tons of money, but we always knew this. I mean, you've been talking cord cutting since before it was cool to talk about it. You know, for years, we've been talking about how this was going to happen, how the revenue stream was going to dry up, how that, you know, it was going to get a little bit more bone on bone and the old man was going to die eventually. And they were going to have to pay the Nationals eventually. We didn't know the Nationals were going to be good and win a championship. I would think through all of this strife and all of this, can you put some clarity for our audience and anybody who might not really know anything? And I'm trying to use you as a voice of reason, because I'm unreasonable about the old man since he took my press pass. Masson against Nesson, against these other RSNs. Yeah. We've seen the NBC thing sort of close up shop last week as well. I know the Sinclair boys and the Atlas, they're all mixed in with this, you know, this buying these regional sports networks that literally had no programming for 6 months. And then there's Masson, who sort of like 15 years ago, Johnny Boy was going to like go into the broadcast business and they were going to have partners and they were going to do Terps deals and Ravens deals and Redskins deals and they were going to be this model. All they decided very early on, Marty, if you were writing the story of Masson, that it wasn't worth any of it to put any money or make it any good. It was just literally take the check and provide the bare minimum of everything everywhere at every turn, even if it was a studio with bad lighting up off Schwann Road.
Yeah, so everybody that has a cable subscription, whether you have Comcast, if you go in the inner parts of DC, you get Cox, you get some other RCN, different places like that. If you go look at your cable bill, there's your charges for your internet and video, et cetera. But then you go what I call below the line and you look at fees that are attached to it, not options, not something you can drop. There's something called a broadcast fee and an RSN fee. The broadcast fee might be as much as $10. That money gets spread out to the networks that care, that you have on your cable, NBC, CBS, those local stations and the networks, they get that retransmission broadcast fee. And then there's what we call the RSN fee. And that might look like $6, $7. I'm not sure what people's cable bill looks like right now, but that money was then split because some of that's Masson RSN fee and some of it was NBC Sports Washington Masson fee. Those that number, as you know, goes directly to Masson in this case. So that's what they had to work with. And then they might have had some additional advertising revenue, but 80-20, 85-15 towards subscription fees versus advertising fees is what it would be. And so we've seen over time that erode, less people taking cable, et cetera. We'll get into what that means for having it streaming and all that. But that's what was happening. And I, as I tweeted the other day, it was just never a good idea, and not even a 1% good idea, to have one team own the media rights to another team, right? Even if they were best of friends, even if it was Bud Selig and Jerry Reinsdorf back in the day, it just typically usually pulls apart and blows apart. And that's what's happening now, which is forcing themselves into a situation where it's like putting 15 pounds into a 5-pound bag. It just is never going to work. And it's going to be uncomfortable when they try to make it work. And that's where they find themselves today, which is why I say we are closer to a split than ever. But the question is, right now in the marketplace, as you alluded to, there's really just one owner of regional sports networks that is alive and kicking, and that's Sinclair up in Hunt Valley. The other people that own a regional sports network you mentioned are NBC Sports, which are cutting. You have AT&T, which owns four, which is looking to sell them. And other than that, you have independent people in Boston and Los Angeles. And so even, I'll just add this. It is so bad that Milwaukee and Miami, the Milwaukee franchise and the Miami Marlins franchise, do not have a regional sports network agreement in place for this year because it ran out and they can't agree yet on what that price, if they're going to have it. So we are really in really shallow waters in that. So I think those are the combinations, what is leading to why they're asking Trey Mancini to take deferred money, why they're asking Anthony Santander perhaps to take deferred money, and why they could quickly move Alex Cobb if they could, because I just don't think they have the money to support even a $50 million payroll this year if they want to continue to spend in other places.
Marty Conway is my guest. He is the good professor at Georgetown. He ran the business of the Orioles for a number of years back in the 1980s into the 90s in Major League Baseball and the Texas Rangers. He's living in the DMV and washing his hands and wearing a mask and staying away from these kids, but trying to teach them up the right way with sports business down there at Georgetown. I mean, I want to talk about streaming and I want to talk about, you know, where that is, but I do want to get back to the Angelos. I don't want to lose sight of the ball here of what is going on, who is running it. We know they're never going to answer the phone. How pissed is Major League Baseball? How on fire is the whole thing that you're asking your players to give you back money? Like, in the history of sport, in my lifetime, I haven't heard of such thing, not even in indoor soccer leagues or, you know, the like, or the XFLs or the AAFLs or whatever the hell those things were called, where checks don't cash, and the CFL and all of that. This is Major League Baseball, Marty, right? I mean, I don't know what the existential crisis is for them at this point, or for John Angelos or Lou or Daddy or Mommy, or what happened to the hundreds of millions of dollars that flooded in over 15 years, not because of competency, but because of a lawsuit and because of this arrangement. This arrangement has allowed the Orioles to just roll on autopilot for 15 years, and now the lease is up. The old man's about to expire. You know, the Major League Baseball's in trouble. They're asking for money back. The network's, you know, piss broke. I don't know where the future is, but to your point, Milwaukee and these other teams that can't even find an RSN. Marty, you were talking about all of this with subs and cord cutting and streaming and, you know, when are we going to pay to watch the Super Bowl? All of that stuff we talked about. Boy, this plague has been a complete tectonic shift for everything in sports, and for the people that got rich being lazy like John Angelos to now have to figure it out where it is where it is. And I don't even know when, like, selling a franchise right now, you know, let's call John Moog. Hey, you want to sell the Orioles? Really? I mean, it'd be like selling my condo in downtown Baltimore right now. Like, I'm wondering who could speculate. You know, as much as the Sinclair guys would like to own it or put Baltimore on it or whatever it would be, this is a really tough to speculate anything right now, I think would be foolish. I have no guess as to how this is going to turn out, but I know one thing. The Angeloses cannot fix it because they're not capable, not without getting Uncle Masson money, which they've had the whole time. Now they're going to have to go and figure it out. Boy, that worries me. That worries me for the bricks behind my building here in the warehouse, that what's going to be happening there 5 years from now, because everything from here forward, you know, I wonder who's running it, Marty. That's, you know, that's where I get back to, what does this mean for me, you, the Orioles, the city, the Sheridan, the mayor, the governor, the harbor? What does it mean? Because somebody's got to save them. I've been trying for 15 years, and I think a pissed off Nationals fan base at Masson, yeah, that's a little flag I can run around for a day or two to say, while we're worried about Lamar Jackson, what's going on with the baseball team?
Yeah, I think what you talked about earlier there is that the health crisis that we've gone through has been an accelerant to the issues that have been happening immediate, right? So people, like we've talked about, we've been on your show for years talking about cord cutting and streaming and slimming down people's cable bill and doing things like that. And young people not even taking a cable subscription. I mean, they avoid it like literally like someone would avoid a virus. But what's unique about this is, look, it's not uncommon, and the Nationals have done it, signing a Max Scherzer and saying, Max, we're going to sign you to a, you know, 4-year, $120 million, 5-year, $150 million deal. But we're asking you to defer X amount of your dollars out over 15 years or 20 years. That hasn't been as uncommon. What is uncommon is to look at somebody who is in an arbitration situation, still less than 6 years, can't go anyplace else, tied to the team, to say, would you take 20%, which might be $1 million of your salary, and defer that for a year or two or whatever they're going to do. That part's unusual. But again, I think what it signals is the cash flow right now for teams, in particular teams in a market the size of Baltimore with what's going on, it's precarious because they haven't had an in-season, off-season to sell into and a number of those things. And so, yes, that bathing salts that was Masson dollars for 10 or 12 years that literally looked like it might go on for another 10 or 12 years at XYZ levels. But look, I've known for 4 or 5 years since 2015, these numbers are in doubt. These subscription numbers are going to go down. And no matter how much you try to increase subscriber dollars per sub, it's just, you're going to lose 10,000 people a month.
It's like taxes, Marty. Eventually they just move to the county next door and say, I'm not paying any of it, right?
Yeah, look, that's what happens, right? Ridership or something goes down and they say, well, we got to make that up. So we got to increase tax more, you know, people per rider, so to speak. And that can only exist in a certain environment. And so I think it puts a lot of pressure. And then the next question is, Mike Elias wants money for two teams in the Dominican Republic, enhanced international scouting, all those other areas. And look, they are going to save some by taking every team has gone from five affiliates to four. So Frederick may have baseball, but it won't be an Orioles affiliate right now. So teams have saved money on that, but that's not a substantial amount of money. And so, again, I think this is the macro environment that they're looking at. And your question is, where does the money come from? Look, it comes from sources, either consumers or it comes from new partners. And again, the thing for the Orioles franchise structure has been they haven't taken on new partners in forever. And I don't think they would, because I just don't think that's something that Peter Angelos has felt comfortable with. And so the question becomes, where does that cash infusion come from? And I've said for 3 years, 4 years since the Masson thing really got big, is the only way out of this is somebody pays. I don't think it's going to be the Orioles. I think it's going to be a cash infusion from some other media organization to take over part or full control of Masson. And as a part of that, have to pay the debt to the Nationals. I don't know who that is. Right now, the only real operator are Sinclair, or some private equity firm comes in and says, we'll take a piece of it, but you know what? We want to have first crack at buying the team when and if it does become available. So I think those are some of the outside things that could, you know, potentially be happening here over the next year or two, or whatever that time frame is on the ownership's health.
But Marty, I think we're all speculating when this is over. We all get a shot, whenever that is, 6 months, 8 months, 18 months, 3 years. I don't, you know, who knows, variant, mutant strains and all that. But when this is all over with, I'm trying to figure out where the speculators who speculate with this sort of money, that I look at it as someone who loves the Orioles, loves Baltimore, lives here, involved, you know the mayor, you know all the players. I'm wondering who that person is that's going to speculate on the sport of baseball in Baltimore, you know, in this media environment with that kind of dough right here, right now. And I don't know that the Angeloses they were never looking to sell. So selling low is something that wouldn't happen, but selling desperation, you know, breeds all sorts of partnerships, right? But it feels desperate. And I still go back to how much money the old man had, how much money he printed off of this, how frugal they were, how frugally it's been run all the way through. And this notion that they're running under desks and mom and dad and nobody has the money to pay Trey Mancini, I don't know whether that's real or not. I'd love to know whether they're really broke, bad investments, who knows? I mean, it happens to everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Or whether this is a poor mouth, structuring of the legal angle to do whatever the next chess move is to try to get rich again. And do we screw them and how, which is, you know, where we've been since asbestos, that will be the next move, because I don't know who here is going to come together to run to save the Orioles when the gun comes out. And the lease is up, and it's, well, we don't want to leave because this is the way it all, well, you know, we're not really leaving. We're just poor. You know, that's the way this always begins, Marty, right? I mean, that was Bob Irsay. I don't really want to leave. I'm just poor. I'm just an air conditioning salesman.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I say this.
That's how Art got here.
Right. I know there's a lease potential issue out. I don't think there's any risk. I don't think baseball is going to allow any team at this point to move, especially into a territory, whether it's Nashville or Charlotte or Portland, wherever it is, where they could potentially in 5 or 8 years achieve a $1.5-2 billion expansion fee. So I think that's good water cooler talk, but I do think.
Well, your inside poker is they'll make more money by saying no, you can't leave.
Well, they're not going to give it. They're not going to give it to one owner, right? To say, well, you get 2/3, you've got to split 1/3 of whatever you get. It's just, they're going to preserve new markets for themselves as the league, as opposed to allow one owner to move into a market. Again, that's just something. So a couple things. Number one, baseball has put together change in ownership rules, which was important last year, which now allows people to put together private equity funds. So $500 million, $600 million, billion-dollar funds. They can now invest in more than one team. So somebody out there that has a $750 million investment fund could put $50 million into the Orioles and $50 million into the Marlins, and they would be okay with that. So baseball has looked to find ways to help these teams that might need some additional funding and capital do that. So again, I don't think, look, there has, since you've and I've been doing this, since you've been into the business, when was the first time or any time you've seen a team actually sell for less than what they bought it for or some other kind of market valuation? That's just not going to happen.
Well, you always think you can create a miracle, right? I mean,
all I need is two buyers. And if you look at what the Mets had, they had like three buyers and they were able to achieve a $2 billion price tag, frankly, for a team that's got a whole lot more debt on their books than the Orioles do. Their contributions to Citi Field put them, and also had the financial scandal where they lost money in the Bernie Madoff situation. So they were really in a difficult situation. I don't see
they
that
have here. A real brand though, and people still care about them. I mean, I'm tremendously worried about the Orioles and what has happened to the brand, which the Mets ran into the ground over the last 5 years. They were in a World Series a couple of years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I am too about that. But here's the thing. Like, I think the Orioles franchise is probably worth somewhere between $1.2 and $1.5 billion. If you layer in the network, I'm not sure if they have both teams, one team, there's a few $100 million more for that. So, I think that's the combination. I personally think somebody looks at the Orioles and says, that's a great opportunity. Why? The relationship that the team has had to the market going back 50 years isn't like Miami, isn't like some of the other places that are, this is more like St. Louis. This is more like Detroit. This is more like places like that. So I think somebody looks at that and says, it's going to be difficult and we're going to have to really work hard to get corporate big dollar support. But I do think somebody on the outside looks at that, or a combination of local people and somebody on the outside looks at that and says, if we can just get the seller to sell to us. When I worked for George Bush, the one thing he told me about acquiring the team is he said, look, mate, the one thing that I had that nobody else had was I had the seller. Eddie Childs would sell to me. He wouldn't sell to somebody else. So if somebody does have the seller and has that confidence, I think that transaction happens. And I think with some injection of dollars, but I think it's going to take $50 or $100 million of just capital infusion into revitalized parts of the franchise when the time comes. It's a great opportunity because of the relationship that the Orioles franchise has with its fan base. It's a whole lot tougher, though, than it was in 2000 when there was no team 42 miles home plate to home plate down the road. So I think that's what looms out there. But as you said, I don't know what the timing is. I don't know what the finance structures is around that. But look, I don't think there'll be any less than three or four people hotly interested in the team when and if it does become available.
Marty, I would just say this because I was going to interject. You mentioned Miami, and I thought, well, you know, somebody who's actually been to Miami, and I've been going to Miami for 35 years, if anybody thinks it's ever going to work down there and they bet billions of dollars on it and they've been in that blimp in the middle of nowhere that nobody wants to go, that alligators are closer to than anybody in Fort Lauderdale or anywhere north where people have money and might like baseball, somebody bought on that, right? So to buy into Brooks and Boog and the Orioles and revitalizing, but if you had to do this all over again and you had to do a study, not a bullshit study, not a real study, not something that Mr. Angelos pays for to say something good about Baltimore, not one of these political studies, but if you were just studying cities and you were the one, it was your money, and you were going to put a team in Portland or Nashville or Albuquerque or Austin or Montreal, wherever, Baltimore would not be the place in the same way as I wear all my Ravens Super Bowl stuff, that the NFL didn't want to come here. They wanted to go to Charlotte. They wanted to go to Jacksonville. They wanted to do all those things. So when I see fresh money and I say I'm going to invest that, I would absolutely agree with you that who would look at Miami other than weather and girls and somebody that's never been to a baseball game in Miami or ever spent any time there to realize, like, could you really get people excited about the Miami Marlins ever? I would agree with you. You could get people excited about the Baltimore Orioles. It's hard for me, given what I've been through, and even you probably, knowing how incompetent, obstinate, difficult, litigious, mean spirit. I mean, I go through all of those adjectives that, you know, might apply to a former president of the country as well. But we've all lived that. But if someone shiny comes in and they dress Cal up and they roll it out the right way and they really do treat people well, I don't know where the price point is, Marty, to get people 80 times a year, 162 nights, all those things we grew up with. But I would see that you could kickstart the Orioles, hotwire it a little quicker than you probably could have hotwired in a lot of other places. So I could feel that attractiveness, but I would also say that a smart guy like you would come in here and say, I see you're wearing Under Armour. Is Under Armour going to be in business 3 years from now? Because at one point we thought they were the $20 million a year sponsor that was going to be the, you know, to hold this thing together. Where are the Fortune 500 companies? All of those things are problematic, not to mention that the Nationals exist, they're real, they're not conceptual, and those people are never coming. So part of that would worry me if I were the billionaire and I weren't, you know, I don't know, I'm making it up, you know, someone that just loved the Orioles, some Michael Phelps guy that, you know, loved Baltimore, just a real investor. It's a lot of money. And I think it's a different era than George Bush 30 years ago.
No question. Look, I think it's going to have to be when and if this does transpire, it's an inside out operation, which is you're going to have to start in the core of the Orioles and the franchise and the city and the relationship to the city. Look, people, fans haven't not been downtown to a sporting event largely. We're upcoming on a year. It looks like we'll probably go. I don't think baseball starts in March 29th. I don't know that it starts on April 29th. And I don't think there'll be significant or maybe any fans. So we had one or two Ravens games where a few thousand people went down. But otherwise, since then, since March, or since the previous end of the previous season, we haven't had fans downtown. And so when you go 12, 16, 17 months without something happening, clearly things are going to change. The city has its issues and there are struggles around that. But like I said, having said that, Major League Baseball wants to expand internationally. So Montreal and Monterrey, Mexico, or Mexico City become the prime candidates. I think a city like Charlotte that has done extremely well with their AAA team is probably one of those places in the U.S. where you could say there's more people moving there than other places around the country. So I think there are a few places. But as I said, as an existing franchise and not having to start up and spend all of that that goes with that, I think the Orioles franchise won. But it's going to be an inside-out operation. It's going to be going into people office to office, company to company, and saying, trust us, we have confidence, we can regain the confidence of people coming downtown, regain the confidence of people spending in advance. And as you said, the corporate scene is a whole lot different even than it was 5 years ago, let alone 15 years ago. But the further away you get from Baltimore City, there are startup organizations. So I think there's a foundation for that, that somebody looks at that. But look, this is not like having Legg Mason as the headquarters in your city. That doesn't exist anymore. I don't think in 5 or 10 years, Under Armour is as big in the city as they are today. I think they have fewer employees here, maybe more employees in other places. So I think there's some changes ahead. But again, with some sort of study and some real research to find out where those pockets are. Just as the Nationals came in and took a portion of the market all the way down, I think the same thing can happen because the Yankees come here a lot. The Red Sox come here a lot. There is some interest here that doesn't happen in Washington. That's what they're going to have to build on, as I said, eventually when this thing looks like a refresh, a sale, or whatever that circumstance is going to be.
Marty, I've held you too long already. I appreciate you as always. I mean, this is sort of meaty because you and I, we jab at this, right, all the time. We're always throwing a punch or two. But, like, to really get in and punch on it a little bit for where it is right now, especially a year out from the plague and a year closer to the end, it's a really important conversation. And I know you know that. And I know, other than talking to me about it, you probably don't have a lot of these conversations with a whole lot of people, certainly not publicly, where it is, I mean, it's not as important as education or COVID or crime or any of these other things that I talk about all day, right? But boy, you know, if someone ever came calling, it would be a dark, dark day here that's what we're talking about. And we are talking about it, but we need to talk about it as to how will it thrive? Because it's certainly not doing that right now, and it needs to be talked about.
Look, there's a franchise called the San Francisco Giants that were in a similar situation, not from an ownership standpoint, but people didn't want to go to Candlestick Park. They didn't like this. They didn't have all these other things. They put together that refresh, and they have captured not only were they successful on the field, won three championships in a decade, but revitalized how people think about that franchise. And again, I think there are elements there that will be picked up. But again, I just want to leave you this. I don't think there's any shortage of people in or outside the city and around the state who look at that and say, I think I could fix that. And I think I've got, or I have the ability to get access to that money. And I think they would love to be able to address it when the time comes. Look, this current ownership has owned the team. They're pushing 25, 26 years more, whatever it is, have owned it longer than anybody else. The Hofburgers, Eli Jacobs, Ed Williams. And so all those things come to a conclusion and they get handed off. Typically these franchises do. And that's when things begin to revitalize. So again, I don't know that it's anytime in the near future, but I think at some point it will transition. And I think that's how people on the outside look at it.
Marty, we're getting older. It's 27 and a half years. Don't cheat me out of the awfulness of all of it, but or cheat me to the fact we can get to the end of it. Love you, man. Appreciate you. Take care of yourself. Okay, all right.
All right. Thanks, mate.
Marty Conway, Georgetown University professor, sports business. And we get together and try to take deep dives on all this stuff to get some reality and not, you know, no offense to phone callers, but you know, I'm trying to get the best information I can get here so that when people ask me, I know the truth. And I know the truth is, the lease is coming up, and the truth is the team isn't very good. And the truth is that they're crying poor. So, and we're going to try to figure all that out as we figure out this plague and we figure out the 20th anniversary of a beautiful experience for everybody here in Baltimore. We talk about the reason we have these franchises, bring people together, bring some prosperity together. Nothing would make me happier than a healthy, vibrant Baltimore Orioles. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.